This is Caroline interviewing Glenys Riddell on the 4th of November 2020. Good morning, Glenys, and thanks very much for contributing to our wonderful Hawke's Bay Knowledge Bank. Looking forward to hearing your story.
Right, thank you, Caroline. Yes, so I was born in Hastings, St Albans Street Annex, which was run by Sister Cooper, on the 1st of May 1939, so it was just at the beginning of the war, which was pretty tough for parents in those days. One sibling who was 3 years older, and her memory does go back, she can actually walk into that building and show me which room I was in. My parents were Ethel and Ezra Hawkins. I had maternal grandparents that lived very close to us, they were wonderful. Paternal parents, their names Mary and Joseph. So our faith was brought up by both parents. So went through a Sunday school at Parkvale School and then on to big Sunday school at St Andrews and Bible class. So I had a lot of faith upbringing and still very involved with our church. When I was about three, I got sent to kindergarten. Had just started in Hastings as a free kindergarten in those days. So I sent off on my little tricycle, met a couple of friends down the road, crossed over Hiratonga Street and up to the drill hall in Warren Street. All on our own. I didn't remember enjoying it much because you had to sit on a mat and meant to have a sleep and then you were meant to drink that awful milk. But never mind, when I got to five, I was sent to Parkvale School and that was quite good because my sister was already there, so it was easier. I was taken, my mother wouldn't take me the first day because she knew we'd have a performance from her little daughter, so I was sent with a neighbour and that was fine. Parkvale, I do have very happy memories of 7 years there. Reasonable reports, really good teachers. One teacher who I remember very clearly was George Lowe, who climbed Everest with Edmund Hillary. I had him for 2 years, and we could sidetrack him on a Monday by asking where he'd tramped over the weekend. By then it was morning tea time, so he'd lost half the day of school. But in Form 2, there was 52 of us in 1952. So every 3 years we have a get-together of the remaining 40 of us and a very close association with those cast members. I loved athletics at school, and that was about the time the Hastings skating rink opened. So my sister and I got very, very involved over there. 3 nights a week we would go over on our bikes to the skating rink and join in the activities over there. And then because my mother had been involved as a guide, the first guide company in Hawke's Bay was at Havelock North, and she used to tell us of the camps she'd go to and the fun she'd had. So my sister had started guides, and so I was allowed to go to Brownies, which was held in St Barnabas Hall in what was then Selwood Road, now Windsor Avenue. So I had a great time at Brownies, can't remember my leaders' names. And then the St Barnabas Hall and church got burnt down. So we were moved to Windsor Park. There was a big old homestead there.
What sort of year would that have been?
That would have been, I would have gone to guides when I was 10, so it was probably 1949, 1950. So I went on to guides. And at that stage, our national headquarters was in Hastings on Queen Street upstairs. So it was handy for parents to go up and buy your uniform belts and ties and things. I loved my guide time and was made patrol leader. Then the leaders moved on, and so 4 of us were sent to Frimley Guide. So we used to bike down to the barn, which was in Frimley Park in those days, and Kath Stirling was a great leader. I remember going to a camp in Gisborne on a train. I can't remember much more about it, except the last night we had to pull the tents down, so we slept out in the open. And you remember that with the possums running around and that. And another trip I had was on the train to Wellington. The train started in Gisborne, picked up guides all the way through, so there would have been hundreds of us. And it was celebrating, I think, 40 years of guiding in New Zealand.
Gosh, that must have started pretty early.
Yes, we started guiding in New Zealand before England. Because Colonel Cosgrove, one of Baden Powell's friends, came out and started guiding in New Zealand before England started. So my friends over there are a bit jealous that we're ahead of them, but they get over it here. Yeah. So we boarded at Mount Cook School. So each day we'd walk down the town hall and practice our pageant. swinging all the way and back again. I didn't do my Queen's Guide because I wanted to go into leadership. So a friend of mine started Karamu Guides and met at the Mayfair School. We had a group of guides there, and that was about the time that biscuits first came into New Zealand, guide biscuits.
So we're still in the 50s, are we?
We're still in the 50s, yeah. Yes. I remember helping the girls go around with them and selling the biscuits. I used to love taking them up to Chambers Bush, up the peak. We'd walk all the way up with our haversack on our back and do our hiking and cook a sausage on a stick and a bit of damper. And
tell me, where were the biscuits made? Do you remember in those days?
Wherever Griffin's factory was.
So it was in New Zealand.
It was in New Zealand, yes, because no other country had them. Australia came in after us with biscuits and America with their cookies. They actually still do cookies over there. But they were a good fundraiser. So I was still involved with guiding until I was about 18, and then boys came on the scene, so it was a bit more interesting than looking after 10, 11-year-olds. So when I left school, I was still at guides, and my first job was with Jackie and Webber, the optician. A barber class friend got me the job, so I was allowed to leave. My mother, I hadn't mentioned that earlier, when I was 3 and my sister was 6, our father went off to the war. And decided when the war was, he wouldn't come back to our family. So Mum was a solo mother and brought the two of us up with help from grannies. And we had a great upbringing with her. She did so well. No social security in those days either.
No.
Nothing. She got there. So I was quite pleased when I was able to leave school, because I'd gone to high school as a 12-year-old to Hastings High School, co-ed in those days. I am going to backtrack there. Mm. So when I went to high school, I did the commercial course. Much as our teacher in Form 2 wanted to stay professional and learn a language, that was not going to be my scene. So two of us argued profusely with our Form 2 teacher and decided that no, we would take commercial. So during that time, I worked in the school office in my fifth form year under Mr. Teer, our headmaster, and learnt a lot in that office, and then would go back to other subjects as I was required. And that gave me a job in the holidays with Beards, drapers, because Mr. Beard was very interested in commercial girls and learning Chamber of Commerce and passing exams. So I sent upstairs and the chutes, I don't know what they were called.
I can't remember what those chutes were called.
But the sellers downstairs would put the person's money in and then shoot it up, and then I'd do the change and shoot it back down. So that was a good holiday job through him. So when I left school, as I said, I went to Shackey and Webber, which originally was Webber and Shackey before that, down Russell Street, a little dark alleyway there. I was receptionist there. I hated Wednesdays because I used to have to assess the 18-year-olds coming in. I was still only pro 16 for their military training. They'd try and bribe you, saying, well, you know, I really can't see that colour. Mm. So after 18 months there, I was not earning a great deal. And so I got a job as a shorthand typist at the transport department. I think I'd been on £2.05, as a granddaughter said recently. Was that an hour? I said, no, that was for 40 hours.
Did you learn shorthand at school?
Yes. That was the main subject. Shorthand, typing, bookkeeping, commercial practice. They were your main core subjects. The unfortunate thing, school certificate, you had to get your shorthand covered 50% and your typing covered 50%. And I didn't quite make the shorthand, but that was okay. I still got through in life without that. Yeah. So my life, 4 years at transport department, was actually, I loved it. I loved my boss, my senior traffic officer. A lot of the time I was sent over to Napier to help the girls catch up over there. So instead of my bus fare, one of the traffic officers would give me a ride and things so I could save my bus fare here. And then 1962, I got married. So that was the end of my working and the end of Hastings, because I married a farmer and moved to Ongaronga. Raised 5 children there, and of course, naturally, I wanted the children involved with brownies and guides and cubs. So the oldest boy went off to cubs with my help, but I wasn't that happy taking boys. And then the oldest girl, I put her name down for brownies because there was always a waiting list, and got involved straight away with her.
So back into it, as
back into it, yes. Yeah. Helped, and then when she was 10, because naturally they didn't have a guide leader, so I went into guides, but I had a lovely unit there, got very involved with guiding, national training, so I was never home.
What were the main differences between when you were there in the 50s and then the 60s?
I don't know. The uniform was still very similar, so yeah. Uniform was still, you know, you had to be official where you had the right way and your badges all had to be right, but because now you can get away with just wearing a pair of shorts and a sash with no uniform. The uniform's really...
And interestingly, the uniforms in those days, you were still doing your tramps and doing your camps and things,
yes.
But the uniforms were not necessarily...
No, we had camp uniforms, which were more casual, so the girls could wear, or the leaders could wear shorts and things, so it wasn't as...
In the 60s, yes, had changed that.
Yes, it just slightly got a wee bit relaxed, yes.
Yeah.
And I remember probably at the end of taking my guides, I used to say, we don't need to wear your beret today, unless it was something official. Yeah, it was a wee bit more relaxed, and then after that, Osh came in, so it got back being so strict. I mean, I could... have my girls swimming in our pool after guides and just say, well, you're my visitors now, you're swimming, but you couldn't do that now. You probably need six people to look after one child. Yeah, so I did that. I got very involved at national level doing national trainings and ran a lot of camps. Camps for Hawke's Bay girls, so we'd have 250 girls on our property and camp with no buildings. Men would cart the water for us and the cooks, the QMs, cooked on outdoor fires. And then we'd got into jamborees, which were at the New Zealand international level, and the one that we held at Tikakino, we had 3,000 people on site there just on a paddock. The only building we bought in was for national office to run their computers out of, and I was leader in charge for that, so that was fun. But up till then, when I went to jamboree, I used to QM. I had a good team of women with me, and we loved QM. You'd cook in one marquee for 350 kids, and yeah, it was good. So guiding has been really special.
And that would have been the time when there were the most people doing guiding.
That's right.
So you were actually at the pinnacle, if you like,
Yes, the numbers were really high then. There was usually a waiting list. When I took guides at Onga, I would try and limit my number at 18 because I had a daughter who was in leadership with me. But to give them the quality of guiding, you didn't need any more than that.
Mm.
But I was very lucky because I fed them in from Wakarara School, Spring Hill School, Onga School and Sherwood School. So for the first quarter of an hour when these girls arrived, they had to catch up on what they'd been doing for the you know, the last week. They were lovely kids, you know, 10-year-olds to 14 before they went to boarding school. They were lovely girls.
And tell me, with the big jamborees, where would all the food come from?
At Tikakino, our person in charge of that got it all coming from... all local. Waipawa and Waipakara were very good. But, you know, you were looking at a town bigger than Waipawa, say, to come onto one paddock. And the program, the girls would go off and do service, you know, like paint the football gates at Matthew's estate. They had a day outing in Hastings and Napier. And so they were off-site some of the time. In Rotorua, Gilmore's were the ones who would bring the food out to us there.
They're still going, Gilmore's, aren't they?
Yes, they are. Yeah. Yes. So then to cap off my service, I was very lucky to be awarded a Hastings City Council Civic Award, which was very exciting. I knew nothing about it. But you don't do it for the accolades. You do it because you're getting a lot out of it. Hopefully you're putting something back in that you've enjoyed over the years. Because I got involved at Women's Institute, decided to take up indoor bowls. We had a big community in Ongaronga, so once I get involved in something, I get involved in.
Yeah.
And then I went to outdoor bowls, which I'm still very involved in as an umpire and coach. I love coaching the new ones coming in. And then my latest one is, well, I'm still very involved with my church, Probus, which stands for Retired People. Yeah. So, of course, 2 years in that, I'm president and I enjoy that. We have lots of fun with.
And lots of lovely guest speakers. And
Yes, I'm involved. I'm the one that gets the guest speakers and do the mystery bus trips. So my two jobs are fairly big there. And then I'm still involved with guiding because after you finish leadership, you can go into Trefoil Guild. So I've got a lovely group of 20 ladies, Cavillite North Trefoil Guild, and we meet once a month This month we're going to Havelock North Club for a lunch and inviting the Napier ladies over to join us. We had a speaker last month. My niece spoke on Great Ormond Street Hospital where she'd worked. Oh, we went to the library and listened to Veronica speaking. That was interesting. So, yes, so I'm still involved with the community there.
What lovely mystery trips have you been on with Probus?
Oh, right. We've done Norswood. So because I know everybody at bowling clubs and the bus people do like their morning tea, we stopped at Waipara Bowling Club and had morning tea. And then we went to Norswood School and the children entertained us with their Norwegian heritage, and down to the old pub for lunch, and then over to the factory. So you divide into four because they've got a lovely eel farm there now, the carpenter's workshop, the shop, and the factory itself. Another time I took them over to Napier to the aquarium, over the road to what was Cobb and Co for lunch, mm-hmm. Can't remember what it's called now, and then we went to Flaxmere. And the majority in that had never been on to Marae, so we did the Te Ranga Marae. And then the children from Kemiora School came over and entertained us. So lovely. That was a lovely time. We did notice the children had lovely uniforms and sun hats, so I queried whether they had woolly hats, having been involved with tramping, and yes. You must wear a hat. So I got the Probus girls knitting, and we delivered 180 beanies to the children out there. Another time we went to Dunedin, so morning tea was Waipakarau Bowling Club that time, to the museum at Danny Burke Gallery of History. Fabulous museum, up to the RSA for lunch and then down to Fantasy Cave. Another time I took them somewhere for morning tea and then out to Severinson's museum at Ashley Clinton, the Boyd Severinson inherited Keith Severinson's museum. And then after that you go outside and he's made all the old-fashioned shooting things, so there's targets going in directions and things.
And what sort of museum is it?
The deer and all the trophies that Keith brought back from various countries. It's amazing, it really is.
Wow, and how long's that been going on, that museum?
Oh, well, I used to take my guides when he originally was at the back of Ashley Clinton, way back at Makarata, I think he was originally. And then the sun has moved a wee bit closer. And then we went around to a Dean's Bush by Sherwood School for picnic lunch. And then we went down Blackburn Road, and the Bibby family have got a family church there. So having the Bibby children and guides and know the family, we called in there, and it's a lovely church from four Bibby families. Then we drove around Lookout Road, Hinnerua, because that was our old haunting ground and back Highway 50. I can't tell you about the next one I've got planned because it hasn't eventuated because of COVID, but it's
well, it's still a mystery, isn't it?
It's a mystery, yes, and you might tell the story. So it's in the pipeline. September, when COVID came again, I had to knock out, but I planned one and they knew about this, so we were going over to RSA and Napier for lunch, and then on the Art Deco. That's not a train, but that's on hold too. Yeah. Well, I'll do the other mystery one first, seeing that was just put on hold.
And tell me, have any of your children followed up with the guides?
Yes. The three, Bronwyn, Nicola and Fiona, all went through their Chief Commissioner badge, which was the highest one then. And the two oldest ones, Bronwyn and Nicola, went through into Rangers and went to Government House for their Queen's Guide. Bronwyn, the oldest, came into leadership with me, and Nicola went and helped with brownies. Fiona went to Rangers for a wee while, but she did Bronze Duke of Edinburgh at Cedar Horsback College. But the girls all did their teachers and judges exams through Highland Dancing, through Julie Abbott and Seymour and Waipawa. So we were fairly involved with the boys playing cricket and rugby, and Michael went off to Heriworth, so I had one at Kindy and Play Centre and primary school in Heriworth, and yeah, we were on the road a lot.
So that's just piqued my interest, Highland dancing.
Yes, yes, something about that, yes.
In the 60s, when I was a child at the show, that was one of my favourite things to watch.
Oh, you probably watched the girls, yes. Yes, because Bronwyn was born in 64. And she started when she was five. So 1970 on, we were very involved with three age groups.
I wonder if it still goes today, do you think?
Yes, we've got a granddaughter that's still doing it. She's just turned 17, so she's still doing it. Our oldest granddaughter went through Brownies and Guides in Danny Burke, and our grandson did his Queen Scout. but at the moment guiding is not strong.
Why do you think that is, Glenn?
The fees are very expensive. They say that they can't get the leaders because everybody works. But of course, we worked in those days, but you fitted it in. I suppose because both parents are working, they might have that excuse. And now we're on to 7 days a week retail and activities going. So, you know, we're lucky we're still involved with Trefoil and can still help out where we can, but there's not many units around that we can help. So we just do community work and help. Our project next month is bagging up sweets for the centre, Kevin Watkins, that drives around with his centre sleigh. So we bag up about 500 or 600 bags of lollies for him, and then we do a lot of knitting for things. Yes, so we'll wait for the next generation and see whether they come on to...
So Glenys, let's talk a little bit about your experience living on the farm in Onga-Onga and, you know, a little bit more about your earlier life.
Right, I'll sidetrack there because my grandparents, my mother's side, worked for the Chambers on Tairoa Station. So the five children, my mother being the oldest, were born on Tairoa Station. So they could tell you many a story about getting lost around Tabata Peak and just the five little children wandering off with no houses up there or anything and, you know, nearly drowning one child and their activities up there until my granddad bought a wee farm down the end of St Andrews Road. So my grandparents were still there as we were brought up. It was a shingle road, so my mother rode a bike and had me on the back seat and my sister on the seat, and away she'd go until one day she got home and my only doll was a rag doll called Polly. When she got home, I'd gone to sleep and Polly wasn't there. So she dumped us at the neighbours, went off back down and found Polly, much to my relief and probably to Mum's relief too. So we knew all about farming. So when my sister got to 21, engaged and married a farmer, she moved onto a farm. So I thought, oh, well, I better start looking at young farmers too. So yeah, found a nice one and moved to Onga-Onga. 350 acres, which wasn't huge, went through several droughts, but managed to raise five children there, and they learnt to help out because it was fairly busy.
What sort of farm was it, Lena?
We started off with mainly sheep, and then Jim went into bull beef, and we were leasing his uncle's property at Mount Herbert at Waipakara. So it was early starts. Some days when we were working over there, we'd both leave at 5 o'clock. The children were quite capable of getting themselves to different school buses, and we'd go over there and work. And then when the last child, 17, got herself an apprenticeship hairdressing, that was the time we decided that we would move on and bought 1,100 acres at Tionapu, which was off the Raukara Road, Tionapu, between Raukara and Tākai. So we did still have sheep, but mainly bull beef then. But going back to Onga-Onga, yes, we were serviced by Waipa and Waipakarau. Our trips into Waipa was mainly for the Highland dancing and the boys' rugby, because one got into Ross Shields, so that was very demanding, but great for him.
So How far out of town were you?
We were about 35 minutes on the Wakarara Road. We were very close to the Spring Hill School. And so every Monday, Hawke's Bay Farmers Waipakarau would ring me for your order, so you'd put in your small order, your bag of sugar and your bag of flour and bits, and then they'd get the farm order, arrive on Tuesday morning with the delivery, drop the farm stuff at the wool shed, come over with mine, and he was very good because I usually was bathing a baby by then. And so he'd put the frozen stuff in the freezer, which you didn't get much. It was just the bare.
Yes, because I suppose you were self-sufficient.
We were self-sufficient. We'd been brought up being self-sufficient. Mum had to be self-sufficient. If you didn't grow it, you didn't eat. So you grew it and you had chooks and things. So yeah, you were self-sufficient. I mean, we could use a little bit of land and grow enough peas and freeze them for the year, and the same with the gooseberries and black currants and all those things. You had it all.
So it was mainly your dry goods, your flour, your sugar, that sort of thing.
Yes, and you had those pull-out bins for those things.
And what about milk? Did you have a milk?
We had a cow, yes. Well, we started off with one cow and then it got up to four or five. One of the girls learned how to milk just in case something happened, and we'd make our own butter, made enough butter for the year, freeze it, beautiful butter. The cream was there, which was good.
What more could you want?
Yes, you had your own meat, reject lambs. We'd come through to Wakatū, pick up the reject lambs and go home with all the fruit and meat in the vehicle and throw the kids in.
And what school did your children go to?
The children went to Spring Hill School, which was a little country school, two teachers. And the oldest, Michael, stayed there till he was 9, and then we sent him to Hera with his choice. His cousin was there and he thought he'd go, so he loved it. And the three girls and the other boy, he was very, very shy. He didn't want to go to Hera with, so he stayed but got into Ross Shield. And then Michael came back from Harroworth because we had a college bus put on our corner. So then he had to bike a mile on a shingle and catch the bus. So the five of them all went right through Central Hawke's Bay College and did very well. There was everything going for them there, the subjects they wanted, the Duke of Edinburgh scheme was going, and they were happy.
So how many kids would there have been in the school in the 70s?
At Spring Hill, there was about 60. So it was quite big in those days, because when the oldest went off, there was 5 went into school as 5-year-olds that year, which was quite a lot. So, yeah, they had plenty of mates.
And then and Central? Then
Central, I think there was about 700 at the college then, yes. But we weren't far away from Wakarara School or Ongaronga School, so there was always inter-school things happening. And if you didn't have enough for a netball team, well, you borrowed somebody from another local primary school. Then we had the vet club in Waipakarau, so that was handy for that and your other stores. So when I took the girls into dancing, I could whip into Waipara Co-op, I think it was called in those days, and then New World and then Four Square, they seemed to change their names. And then when we moved to Te Ainapu, I was working, I had a job at a bookshop in Waipakarau to get the younger girl into her apprenticeship. So when we moved to Te Ainapu, I kept that job on for a while so I could get the stuff.
So, Glenys, getting back to talking a little bit about your growing up in Hastings.
Right, one of my memories is our maternal grandmother was really good to us because Mum was quite busy working from home. I'll come back to that, what she did to get some income. And so in the holidays, my granny would pick my sister and I up and we'd walk up to Cornwall Park and play on the swings, or we'd go to Nelson Park, which isn't there anymore, and sit for hours and watch the marching girls. I would have loved to have been a marching girls, but at least we got to watch them. And then in the January holidays, Windsor Park was full of campers, and they put shows on each night. So there was either a movie or a talent quest or a concert. So we'd go around to Granny. She was only 3 blocks away, and pick her up, take her to the concert, and then afterwards she'd return us little girls home again. So that was holidays. And then when the Blossom Festival started by Greater Hastings in the September, each household was given a programme with a lucky number on it. So we'd gather up some neighbours' numbers for them, and Granny used to love coming up with us. So we'd go up one side of the street and down the other looking for our lucky numbers, and to this day we never found one. The retailers changed the numbers each day, so you had to go each day, so Granny would come with us. And then they had a Blossom concert, and if you didn't get in the queue to get your tickets, you ended up in the Gods. I don't think they call it the Gods anymore. I think it's the Upper Dress Circle, something more posh. But we'd queue for hours trying to get a ticket to the Blossom concert.
And was that
concert
at the Municipal?
That was at the Municipal Theatre in those days. Yeah. Yes, yes. You'd have the two Jacks doing a display, and then the little Sparks girls doing their Ireland and tap and things. Then we'd go to Greater Hastings' office and get... Somebody would cut out the circles of the pink Blossom paper and we'd take it home, just those two girls, and we'd twist and put them into a box and then take them back the next day and get some more. So we enjoyed doing that. Getting back to Mum, she worked for Hunt's, Westerman's, and there was another draper. So the boy after school would bring down the sewing for her. So in those days, the nappies would come in one big roll of material. Mm-hmm. She'd rip it off and then she would sew them. And that's how we learned to sew straight, edging the nappies. And the bibs were the same, bias binding and the edging. And then the frilly curtains, she used to have to make the frill and put those on. And then the worst job was the Holland blinds, and especially if people wanted a scalloped edge, we used to have to stand and help her guide it through the old treadle sewing machine. So that machine went late at night. And then what she'd done, the boy would come the next day, bring in the orders and take it away. So it was something she was able to do from home and get some income coming in. And I do remember her going off to the IMD, which was the Internal Marketing Board, which is now where the, I don't know who's there now, it was Apple and Pear Board, it's probably Turn and Grow. And they used to box up the cabbages and cauliflowers to send over to the soldiers. And I remember my granny coming around on Saturdays and they'd make fruit cakes and sew them into the old flour bags, and they went over to their soldiers somewhere too. Another awful thing they used to do, well, the other things weren't awful, they were good, was they made their own soap with caustic soda and something else. Fat, revolting smell, but you needed the soap to put in your copper on a Saturday and in your shaker for your dishes. So that was way back in the 1940s. I'm really going back now. Yeah.
So you remember them sending cabbages, cauliflower, cake.
And socks.
And the soldiers.
Yeah. Yes. You couldn't send them to your own relatives because I did have an uncle that went over to Crete and got killed there and buried in Greece, so I've managed to see his headstone here.
And why weren't you allowed to send them to relatives?
Oh, I think that just went off from New Zealand General to wherever.
I see what
they
you mean.
Could, yes. Yeah.
Oh, that's incredible.
So Teretonga Street, Mum used to take us up sometimes on a Friday night, but it was probably quite an effort for her because she couldn't have two little girls walking past the 6 o'clock school coming out.
Of course.
There was always a pub there, so you'd cross over to miss the Albert, and then you'd cross over to miss the Pacific, cross over to miss the Hastings. But Friday night uptown was special. Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve, the whole main street was closed to traffic. So you had hooters and balloons and streamers and who cleaned up the street the next day. But that was Christmas and New Year's Eve.
And was there such a thing as late night shopping in Hastings?
Yes, 9 o'clock.
On a Friday?
Friday night, 9 o'clock, yes.
Wow. Mm.
When you got a bit older, you'd meet a girlfriend. Usually Westmans was the meeting place. And you had to wait for the train to go through because it always went through at 7 o'clock. No, all the shops were open till 9. Because there was no Saturday or Sunday.
And do you remember there being any restaurants or any sort of...
There was the Farmer's Tea Rooms.
Yes.
And that was where we had our wedding. And there was the Pasadena and the Rialto. And they were above... One was above where Blackmore's were, and one was opposite where Hutchinson's are now, upstairs. There was your fish and chip shop, which had a steak bar beside it. Later on, there was Adam's Bruce Tea Rooms. Oh, and then as we got into being late teens, the Intermezzo started up by the Regent Theatre, West End, it changed its name to be a bit posher, and the Windmill opposite the hospital. When the Dutch arrived out in New Zealand, they opened because they ran the tea rooms too. Every block seemed to have a fish and chip shop and a butcher and a greengrocer. And then I think when I did a talk at Probus, I think there was probably 9 places a woman could go and buy material at. Now we've got one. Spotlight. Yeah.
Interesting,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yes, yeah, just how life's changed.
And of course everything was so much, you know, cheaper now, so people don't tend to sew.
Oh, no, no. No, in those days you had to do all your own sewing. Those shirts with the inset sleeves and collars and buttonholes and pyjamas. And...
Well, look, that's been fascinating, Glenys. Thank you very much. And we'll look forward to listening to you on the Hawke's Bay Knowledge Bank site.
I'm right.
Thank you.
Yeah.